I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi there, everybody. My name's Thomas Boff. I'm the editor of wolvesblog.com, a website dedicated entirely to Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club. You can get us at wolvesblog.com or Facebook/wolvesblog or twitter.com/wolvesblog.
Hi, I'm Steve McGuckin. I'm a Tottenham fan based in Belfast. And in a previous life, I was the chairman of the New York Spurs Supporters Club. And you can get them at nyspurs.com.
Hi, I'm Russ Goldman, host of Cottage Talk, a podcast all about Fulham Football Club. You can follow us on Twitter at Cottage Talk and also on my own Twitter account, Russ_Goldman. And we are now actually Cottage Talk as part of the Talk Sport Fan Network.
Awesome. Congratulations to you, Russ, on that count. Steve mentioning he's a Tottenham fan, obviously. Listeners will know I am as well, makes this first topic particularly painful. But Arsenal deserved 2-0 winners against Tottenham in the North London Derby today. And what's really astounding about that is not just the performance of the result, but the fact that they're now 8 points atop the table in the Premier League. I think some people thought they maybe be derailed with losing Gabriel Jesus to injury. Obviously, they just lost out on their primary target to replace him in Mudryk, who just went to Chelsea. But City lost again this weekend. Pep already said that City can't win the league, so basically leaves Arsenal, unless you think one of Newcastle or Manchester United could catch up. So do you guys think at this stage that Arsenal will win the title for the 2022-2023 season? And if so, what will have had to go right for them?
I've been saying all along that I think Man City will eventually catch up, overtake and win the title. I think we have to say that Man City and Arsenal aren't yet at the halfway stage of the season. So even though we're halfway through January, in a normal season, we'd be towards the end of December. So it feels further along than it is. So I don't want to go along that, you know, it's a long way to go, but it's still a long way to go. As to what they need to do, they just need to keep going. You know, that's the keep doing what they're doing. I'm still going to say Man City. I think Pep Guardiola is reacting there in the aftermath of a difficult defeat for them. I was about to say before that late turnaround at Old Trafford that I thought it was going to be a great win for Man City, because it was obvious Man United were going to cause them a problem in that game just because of their form coming into it. But I thought Man City managed the game really well up until they fell apart with the offside goal that should have been given offside but wasn't. So I think, you know, Man City can count themselves a little bit unlucky there. But yeah, back to the point is that I think eventually they will, even though they look more fallible this season, I still think they'll get a good total overall that will mean Arsenal have to maintain the kind of consistency that they've shown. And I just still feel there's going to come a time where Arsenal are going to get stretched. If they keep their entire first 11 fit, then I think they've got an exceptional chance of winning the title. But it's just that question mark, really. We saw Leicester do it, because when they were at the top, obviously everyone thought, you know, they won't be able to keep that first 11 fit, but they pretty much did all season. They only really used about 13, 14 players consistently. So if that happens and Arsenal get that season, they have a very good chance. But I'm just thinking, if they don't, you know, get the reinforcements they want in January, and as you would expect, maybe they lose one or two players. I mean, they've lost Jesus now, and Ketty has come in and done a fantastic job. So maybe their squad is a bit deeper than you think. But my instinct is that at some point they're gonna run into an issue with injuries combined with the Premier League just dragging them back a little bit. I think they've got Man United next, so that's another tough game that they'll need to go in and play very well. So yeah, I think I still just even though obviously the gap is opening up and City don't look as good as they perhaps have at other times, I still would just edge favour City.
Yeah, I have to talk about today's game before I talk about the outlook for the title. That Kevin, today was embarrassing, disheartening, and completely predictable. I mean, once again, you know, we only show up at the break, and even then, it's not enough. And being consistently and predictably outperformed by one team that we've always dreaded it coming up against, and for a long time, it was Liverpool. It was Chelsea before that, and this year it's Arsenal's turn. You know, leaving aside the loaded nature of the North London Derby anyway, but previously those opponents, Liverpool and Chelsea, they were the standard that we would judge ourselves by and what we needed to do to compete going forward. But now, if we're honest, we're looking at the likes of Newcastle, Brighton and even Fulham, Russ, who are competing week on week in a way that we're just not. Anyway, for Arsenal, you know you're going to hear in the press now that it's their title to lose, and I agree with Thomas. I think I'm very reluctant to say that with literally half a season to go, and I actually don't agree that Pep has given up on the title. I think what he said, his actual quote was, I don't care if we win the title. I don't think he said that they can't win the title. But even if he may be prioritizing the Champions League at this point, even though he'd never admit it, I think we're definitely heading in the direction where Arsenal's consistency is going to be the telling point. If they can continue to play at the level that they've been playing recently, then with every game that ticks down, that's one less game for someone to catch them. And I think next week's game, as I think Thomas mentioned, against Manchester United, definitely will come at a point where it'll tell us more about both teams at a crucial point in the season than a lot of other fixtures for a recent while. So, yeah, I'm non-committal, but I think we're heading, with each passing week, we're heading towards a point where unfortunately, the title is heading to Highbury. Oh, and before I stop, one other thing that just rubbed our noses in it this week was Gareth Bale's retirement and the replaying of all those incredible goals that he scored for us. You know, just celebrating one of the best players that any of us has had the chance to watch in the flesh. And the sad irony, of course, being that his only trophyless season after leaving Spurs was the year he came back to Spurs. And frankly, that's just pathetic.
Wow, you guys have said a lot. And I appreciate everything you said about Arsenal. I just want to mention this, and I believe I made this prediction on the EPL roundtable. I actually predicted Arsenal to win the title. And I stick by that now. But the argument that you guys are both making, I would agree on this. I think it's ultimately going to come down to consistency, which I think that they have already shown. And then on top of it, it's going to be how fresh and also how can they keep that starting 11 intact? Like you were talking about prior, the situation with Leicester City, I think that rings true for a team like Arsenal. And also, I'm a big fan of Arteta, and I think potentially the student is going to beat the professor. We'll end up seeing this play out, but I wouldn't count out Manchester City at all. I know what we're talking about with maybe the situation being more about the Champions League, but I would not count them out. There's too much quality there. But as the two of you have already mentioned, I think it will come down to that combination. And Arsenal are a very good side. I think that they're going to win the title, but there's a lot of football still to be played, as you both have just talked about. So I wouldn't rule anything out. I wouldn't rule out Man City at all. I also want to give a shout out, and I'm glad that you've already mentioned this as well, to a team like Newcastle United, who Fulham just lost to today. what it comes down to is consistently playing each and every match. And that's what Newcastle have done. That's what Arsenal have done. And that is what, to me, what I've been watching this season, what can separate a team. It's ultimately each and every match coming to play and having a chance to win. And in the case of Arsenal, being the best at it. So for me, I think Arsenal is the team to beat, but I'm not ruling anything out.
Yeah, it's as you all say, it is pretty crazy that we're heading into the third week of January and not every club has even played their 19 matches yet to reach that midpoint of the season. But yeah, I mean, 8 points at the top is pretty significant. And we'll see if they're able to hold on. But Russ, you just mentioned Newcastle there. Obviously, there's it as well as Arsenal. It feels like the Leicester year again for Spurs fans, but for two different clubs, hoping that Newcastle fall off enough to get a top four spot, hoping Arsenal fall off so that they don't get the title. And it didn't work when we just needed one club to fall off. So hoping that two do it at the same time, feeling particularly likely. We'll head now to the other end of the table, where I wanted to talk about West Ham and Everton, both currently in the relegation zone, and they actually have the exact same record over their last five matches, one draw and four losses, which isn't ideal. Which of either do you think is more likely or capable of pulling themselves to safety come the end of the year?
I think you would have to say that West Ham have the better squad. I think back to front, really. West Ham, you look at them and think they shouldn't really be down there, but it perhaps speaks to the competitiveness of the Premier League that they are. They played my team Wolves yesterday and lost an important game. I said in my preview to the game that it's bizarre because they've got the exact same group of players that were competing for the Champions League. I think basically 12 months ago they were right up there, weren't they? And what has gone wrong there? I'm not really sure. Is it that they've just tried to evolve that team and it's taken them backwards? Probably if some of the players dropped off a level. I don't know. It's very strange because normally there's a trigger and normally it involves personnel leaving for that kind of dramatic drop off, or teams just figured out the way the Moyes formula and how they want to play. But certainly on paper, and you know, with the experience of David Moyes, they should have enough to turn it around with the group that they've got. With Everton, it's a different kettle of fish. You've got a more inexperienced manager in Frank Lampard, albeit he kept Everton up last season. But I think because the Everton fans themselves have pointed out, they don't seem to have that Richarlison figure who's going to spearhead a big survival push. And their squad looks light. You know, they've got some okay players. But I don't think they've got enough sort of copper bottom players that you would bet the house on them, you know, grabbing that team and taking them through some tough times. So I think if they don't add to their squad and or change the manager, I think they're in a lot of trouble, Everton. I think, you know, if you look at the teams around them, they're making moves. I mean, Wolves, again, okay, there's a certain bias, but you know, from the outside, we bought in Lopetegui, he's a manager with a huge pedigree. They bought a striker in for 40-50 million pounds from Atletico Madrid. And there's three or four other players, you know, that are in the process of coming in. Other teams are making moves. Notts Forest are finding consistency in that group of players that they've got. Even Southampton, three wins in a row, albeit two in the cup, but they seem like they're picking up. So the pressure is really on. But yeah, I would say out of the two of them, with the status quo as it is, with the players and managers they've got, I think West Ham have an infinitely better chance of staying up than Everton. And I would back West Ham to beat Everton next week, which I believe is the next fixture. So I think that could be a turning point for them. But yeah, massive game in store there.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with pretty much everything you just said there, Thomas. Not a good weekend for Merseyside generally, but the situation at Everton is worrying on and off the pitch. I mean, we're at the point where, you know, if the board is thinking of pulling the trigger on replacing Lampard, they're kind of at that dangerous point in terms of available replacements where, instead of sort of trying to upgrade with another medium-term project, they'll be forced to bring in someone like Sean Dyche, who they think might give them a better chance of staying up this season. But then what happens after that? So there's certainly, I think, disarray in those ranks. And I think you made a very good point about they don't seem to have a player like Richarlison that they can use as a touchstone for motivating the team to escape this season. So I think West Ham, certainly of those two, are probably more likely to sort themselves out. And I think in part just because, you know, Moyes has been up and down the managerial road in a way that Lampard just hasn't. So yeah, I think I'd have to go with West Ham on that. But you know, it's interesting that you mentioned next week's fixture, because it was a hugely significant weekend this weekend all across the league. A lot of key fixtures, and that's how it should be at this point. You know, every result has implications for the top and bottom of the league. And we're starting to see some idea of how things might take shape. And it certainly looks like there will be some big clubs involved in struggling at the wrong end of the table if things keep going the way they are. And we mentioned earlier about the Man United Man City game. Again, I have to address that controversial first goal. You know, it reminded me at the time of that old Brian Clough quote about, you know, if a player's not interfering with play, what the hell's he doing on the pitch? But what it showed, I think, was that the difficulty of having consistency in how the offside rule is applied and, more importantly, explained to everybody else. So, I think West Ham to stay up. But beyond that, that's of those two. I mean, who knows?
So is it okay for me to say that I really can't stand either one of these sides? Is that okay to start this sure. conversation? Because I really don't like either team. So we'll start there. But if I had to choose which one, it would be West Ham, similar to what the two gentlemen before me have already said. So I'm not going to really be adding too much more, except that to say one of the reasons why I would lean more West Ham, and this is difficult because they've dealt with their own situations, I actually think of the two teams, the more toxic situation is Everton right now. And I think that is going to continue to grow. I don't see that stopping. West Ham have someone that I actually have a lot of respect for in Moyes, even though I might not like his style, it does work. And as you guys have already said, they still have the same players from last season. So I would put my money on West Ham based on the players that they have and the manager that they have, and nothing against Lampard and Everton. I just think that without Richarlison, as you guys have already talked about, I think it's an uphill struggle, and I think they will be fighting the relegation battle. And I would, if I was to put my money on any team, it would be on West Ham.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting one. The Everton thing, I just looked up when their stadium's supposed to be built. It isn't next year, so there isn't a chance that they go down and have to play in their brand new stadium in the championship for the first time. But yeah, it's a difficult situation for both, to be sure. Do you think one or the other is more likely to keep their manager through the end of the year, or do you think it'd be unlikely for either of them to make it to the end of the season?
Oh, I think West Ham definitely are probably more likely of those two to stick it out. The worrying thing with Everton, as we've hinted at, is that the board are under a lot of pressure. And so sacking the manager is kind of an easy way to try and deflect from that. But then again, they just put themselves back a few squares. And where do they go after that? So, yeah, I think as both of you have hinted at, the turmoil surrounding the club is difficult to climb out of, and I think Lampard needs to worry that he's going to end up being the fall guy for it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. I think that the problems with Everton at the moment are problems that go back 5-6 years. You know, that it's just that they're coming home to roost now because of their bad dealings in the transfer market for many years. It just meant that in this previous window that they were completely hamstrung. I think they've made moves towards trying to try and change the structure at the club. They brought Kevin Thelwell in, who was at Wolves, and he helped spearhead our promotion outside of the Premier League, obviously working closely with George Mendes. But he had a good amount of pedigree, and I think they were trying to, you know, become more structured in what they were doing and smarter in their recruitment. And I think a lot of people, including myself, earlier in the season, were sort of lauding some of their buys, you know, in Tarkowski and Cody, which, you know, they paid nothing for those players and they sort of helped them defensively. But then they just haven't been able to replace what Richarlison gave them at the other end. And obviously Calvert-Lewin's been injured. So I think that's the problem. So you go down the road of thinking you sack Lampard, but can another manager lift this group? I'm not sure, but I think the you know, to answer your question, Kev, I think what Steve said is absolutely spot on, that the Everton board will probably be looking at it thinking, if we pull the trigger on Lampard, it's going to mean that the fans are talking about who we get in, and it will just change the outlook, which I think they'll probably be quite keen on doing. So I think, yeah, and I think Moyes has banked enough equity to see this out and you know, take them to the finish, win, lose or draw.
Totally agree with the commentary here, because I think that they might look at changing the manager. I don't see West Ham getting rid of Moyes, and I don't think that they should. When you look at Everton, that's the easiest thing to do. And I'm glad that you already mentioned the fact that when you go through a spending spree and the chickens come home to roost, it does show itself, and now it's showing itself. So who is ultimately to blame for this? Is it Lampard? I think that Lampard might be out of his depth, if I'm being honest. So the easiest solution is to, I hate to say it, bring in someone like Sean Dyche. So you do that to stabilize everything, but then you are changing what Everton are about. At least what I know Everton to be about. He's not what I would think of as an Everton manager, but he could save them. I could see them going down that direction if they're really worried, and they should be, about being relegated. Everton being relegated is a big deal. So I wouldn't be shocked if they make the move, and that would take some of the pressure off of the board if they change the manager.
Yeah, we'll see how each of these clubs respond, but I think you guys make a lot of really good points, especially about Everton having done some real damage to their finances, club, etc. in past transfer windows. Of course, we're currently in one. Outside of Chelsea going crazy, I know Wolves have signed a couple of players already, but are we expecting to see the transfer business kind of pick up here in the final 2 weeks, or are we thinking that this is going to just end up kind of being a slow one?
I think Wolves, I know Wolves have got another couple of deals in the pipeline. Sarabia is coming from PSG. It looks like that looks like a good bit of business for not very much money for a Spanish international, and another defensive midfielder from Brazil to go with Lamina, who we've already signed. So I think Wolves are the team, pleasingly from my perspective, who are making the most proactive moves in the market. Obviously, you have to asterisk that and be like, well, will it work or not? Will it improve us? But we certainly need to add to the squad. I would expect all the teams, particularly those at the bottom, to do something in the final weeks. So I think all those squads need adding to. I personally, again, you know, you guys might consider me biased, I don't know, but I think Wolves have the strongest squad of any of those bottom seven teams. I think there's about 3 points now between 20th and 14th or something. But I look at all those squads and I think we've got the deepest squad and the most quality. So I feel a little bit smug about what we've got. Whether it plays out that way, we'll see. I think all those teams need to. I do agree it's been quiet, but maybe again it's a hangover from the World Cup, teams getting players back, auditing what they're doing, trying to get things in order. I think it will heat up in the next week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah, I expect a few more transfers, I would think. I mean, on the balance, the winter, the problem with the winter transfer window is balancing this idea of what players are available, you know, who's out of contract, and is it more likely that you sign a pre-contract agreement with a player to come at the end of the season, Balancing that with the desperation or otherwise that a team might find itself in, whether that's challenging for the title or trying to avoid getting sucked into a relegation fight. I think from a Spurs perspective, I mean, I know there's been a lot of talk about Pedro Porro coming in, and certainly a right wing back is the priority, I think, for us at the moment. But I wouldn't expect Spurs to be particularly active until the summer for a number of reasons, if I'm honest, and a lot of those are to do with whether or not we expect Conte to still be the coach going into next season. I think what we'll do is, or what we'll have to do is assess the status of the players who are out on loan at the moment and whether they have any sort of realistic future with the club. And of course, again, what their agents are thinking that might be the situation with the manager going forward. I mean, transfers don't work on knee-jerk reactions, and they take time to work their way through the system, and to be honest, you know, our recent form hasn't exactly been a good shop window for attracting any big potential signings. So, you know, we'll have to see. But you know, maybe this is finally the year we sign Leandro Damião. Who knows?
Well, in regards to Fulham the transfer window in general, I definitely think is going to heat up. And I agree with my friend talking about Wolves that I think Wolves have the best chance to avoid any type of relegation situation based on the manager and also players that you have and hopefully will be bringing in as well. In regards to my club, I'm hoping that they bring in a right back. We have a starting right back who I think is very good. Unfortunately, he's very injury prone in Kenny Tete. So for me, I'm hoping that they actually do bring in a right back. There's a lot of talk about several right backs, including one from Arsenal's Cedric Soares, that they're looking at, but we'll see what happens. I do think that they do need some help in central midfield as well. There's been some talk about that. But besides that, there's been very little talk in regards to players coming in, but I really want Fulham to get aggressive. More or less to try to make a push. I can't believe I'm saying this, for Europe. I want to see Fulham make a push for Europe. I don't know if they can actually get it done based on the squad that they have, because starting 11 is very strong. The bench is not. We have a very small side right now. So I think that they need to be aggressive in the transfer window. But right now, what I am seeing is really a team that's not being that aggressive. So we'll see. I think Marco has built a very good side, but I think he needs help. So ultimately, I think we're going to learn a lot about Fulham and what their ambition is for the rest of the season if they're aggressive in the transfer market.
Gotcha. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back to ask more club questions with each of our guests.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, and we are back. Thomas, I wanted to start with you talking about Wolves. Obviously, we knew heading into the World Cup that things were going to look a little bit different. You'd already appointed Lopetegui, and he just hadn't started yet for the club. But now with a couple of positive results out of the relegation zone, you get quotes like out of Max Kilman saying that he's already brought back the real Wolves, in quotes. I was just curious your thoughts on this kind of turnaround, and we were talking a little bit about the show, and it sounds like you're pretty optimistic that you might be able to avoid a ruthless relegation fate.
Yes, definitely. It's all been going splendidly, really.
I think when he took over, I was questioning, what's he going to do with this group? I think when things are bad, when things aren't going well, you think it's the end of the world, don't you? You think all these players are terrible. I imagine you're probably thinking a bit like that with Tottenham at the moment, you know, a couple of bad results, you start saying, are any of these players any good? But sometimes it's never as bad as you think it is, you know, and equally sometimes when it's going well, it's never as good as you think it is. But you know, I think Lopetegui's shown that he can get more out of this group of players. And that's what you want a head coach to do. You want him to make the players you've got better, because obviously you always want to be adding new players and making the squad better. But, you know, sometimes you look at players, you think they used to be good. They used to contribute and that, you know, the performances have dipped. And why is that? So he's just made a number of players, you know, 10 to 15% more effective in matches. And we suddenly look, you know, more cohesive as a team. We look like a serious entity. And I think it's helped. It's kind of been a perfect storm. We've had some players who were out injured for a couple of months. Raul Jimenez being an example of one. Wang Ki-chan. Those players got fit and went to the World Cup. Unfortunately, they've come back and they've added to the numbers. So we've had not only a competitive first 11, but we've had those, you know, those five substitutes you can bring off the bench. And we're really feeling the benefit, I think, of that. I think when we beat Everton, Frank Lampard said, look at the players Wolves are bringing off the bench. You know, we can't compete with that. And that's the situation we want to have. So, and I mean, the club have been proactive, not just in bringing Lopetegui in, but, you know, Cunha from Atletico Madrid, €40 million striker. That was a big statement of intent before the window had even opened. Mario Lamine has come in. As I said, there's another Brazilian from midfielder coming in as well, and Sarabia from PSG. So, you know, the club are doing everything they can to support this manager. And, you know, everyone seems like they're pulling in the right direction. So, you know, it's all upside at the moment. It's just a case of, can we just keep this momentum going? The unfortunate thing is that we're now heading into back-to-back matches against Man City and Liverpool. But because of, you know, particularly Liverpool's troubles, you know, combined with our upturn, you go into games thinking, well, actually, can we cause them a problem in that game? You know, we cause them a problem in the FA Cup. And I think that's the mentality change that we've seen, really. Is we've gone from thinking, oh no, there's another game, how are we going to survive, to going into games thinking, actually, we could turn up and you know, have our say in this game. And I think that's the big thing, the belief that the Lopetegui and, you know, the club's kind of proactive response to our poor start has had.
Got it. And you mentioned in the opening that you have already signed a couple of players who are surely to make a nice impact on the club. Are you excited by those players? And what are you expecting to see from Lamina and Cunha specifically?
Yeah, I am. I am excited. I mean, I think we're averaging less than a goal a game. You know, it was another 1-0 against West Ham yesterday. And we're not winning any games with any degree of comfort. All the wins we've had have been narrow, you know, where we've been defending for our lives at the end, just trying to hold on. So, Cunha, we hope he's going to have the answer to, you know, creating and scoring goals. He hasn't got a fantastic goal scoring record. So I think it's raised some eyebrows at the fee we spent for a guy who hasn't really been finding the net regularly for Atletico Madrid. But the hope is that he forms part of a more better attacking unit overall. And there's already been signs of him linking up quite well with Raul Jimenez and Daniel Pedence. Lamina, what Mario Lamina may give us is more legs in midfield. Because, I mean, as we've been saying for years with Moutinho and Neves, they're both fantastic technicians, but they don't cover the ground on the pitch necessarily. So we need more energy in there. We obviously got that with Mateus Nunes in the summer, another highly rated player. But the signs are that I think Lopetegui wants to play a more, you know, a higher press, higher intensity. So he wants more energy in that midfield. But ultimately, again, it also comes down to having a strong bench. And I think a lot of managers said when the five substitute rule was introduced, it was going to favour the top clubs just because they have deeper squads. And I think a lot of the clubs are opening their eyes to that now. I was thinking, well, actually, if you can have five subs, you want to make sure that you've definitely got five good senior players and good options that you can bring on to change the game. And I think that seems to be a policy that Wolves have adopted. So those two players we've spoken of, even if they're not in the starting 11, you know, they can be having their say consistently from the bench. And Lopetegui hasn't been shy about making substitutions at half time at 60 minutes, which is early, and really changing the shape of the team in response to what's happening in the game. So I'm excited about it. I think the coach is experienced and he seems to know what he wants to do. He's obviously quite tactically astute, and we're giving the club are giving him the tools he wants to get the job done. So, I mean, you can't really ask for any better than that.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And then just very quickly, just because you mentioned potentially moving the midfield around, does that mean you think you'd try to fit all three in, or are you now spelling different players depending on the setup of each match?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because we're at the point where we've got overload in a lot of areas. He's gone with three proper midfielders. I mean, he played Nunes, Neves and Moutinho yesterday, but Moutinho's operating in a number 10 position, which isn't really his. I don't think that's really his bag. He's just fulfilling a job there. And that's why I expect Sarabia from PSG to come in and play there, because I think, you know, he's obviously looking for a player to fulfil that role. But in terms of, you know, Lamina, I don't know where he's going to fit in. I think he's come in with the... just for kind of rotation purposes, because I can't imagine he's going to drop Neves or Nunes. He may play Lamina at the base with Neves and push Nunes further on. But then again, Nunes has started to look like a £40 million player since he's been playing in his more favoured sort of holding midfield role. So I honestly don't know what he'll do, but he has done some, you know, strange and interesting experimental things during games. So I wouldn't like to second guess him, really.
Got it. Well, we'll come to you now, Steve, to talk a little bit about Tottenham. And you already kind of teased this in the opening section, but it's the question being asked in every single Spurs group chat right now, which is, with the window open, with Tottenham needing new players, would you rather invest this window strongly to give Conte the team he needs to try to push on with his style? Or would you rather hold on to the money and see if he ends up staying through the summer, or keep that money and invest in whoever comes in?
Yeah, the key question there is whether he stays to the summer. I mean, Conte has been notorious for dropping these hints that he might walk away if things don't go his way, or that he doesn't get the backing from the club. And with each passing week and each performance like today, we've seen an increasing number of Spurs fans who are becoming kind of disenchanted with that approach, let's say that. I'm not saying that they'd care whether he actually walked away or not, but given that rinse and repeat cycle that I was talking about earlier, it just, you expect that the club will take us back a few squares at some point. And, I think an awful lot, it's part of, let's say it's not just down to Conte, it's down to the ownership of the club, the overall investment structure of the club. I know, you know, they've been having talks with various investment groups about taking stakes and that sort of thing. And I think for each of the past few seasons, certainly after the 2019 Champions League final, you could see that Enoch were sort of thinking about when would be the right time to actually walk away from this. We'll see how that turns out. I mean, just as we would be reluctant to commit transfer funds to a manager who's not going to be there in a year, you'd also get a perspective where a potential investor would start to say, well, are we going to actually go in on a project that actually has a manager there who we're going to replace at some point? So there's so many things, so many moving parts in Spurs ownership and management at the moment. And also another thing, you talked about the Spurs chat groups at the moment. I have to give a warning to a lot of Spurs fans who think that Poch is a cert to come back. He certainly, if Conte left, it would be far from a certainty that Poch would even return. And it sort of mirrors the uncertainty that's going on at Liverpool at the moment, because if you think back, both the projects, the Klopp project and the Pochettino project, sort of began at roughly the same time. I think Poch came in 2014, Klopp came in 2015. And then, you know, that those projects culminated in that Champions League final in 2019. And now it's strange to hear some Liverpool fans having lost patience with Klopp and even proposing that Poch replace him, you know. So I think there's an awful lot of moving parts in Spurs relative to the other clubs as well. I mean, Chelsea, and we were talking a little bit about this before the show. This is Todd Bowley's first season in the Premier League. I know he's an experienced sports management person, but he has to adjust to how business is done in the Premier League and that sort of thing. And we're seeing, you know, a lot of the spending, you know, £10 million on a short-term loan deal for a player who's now suspended for three games. And that just seems to sum up really the fact that that's a club that needs to find some stability. And I still think Graham Potter is a good manager. And I definitely would not have been upset if we had gone for him one manager ago. Let's put it that way. But you stick with the manager that you have, even if they kind of throw the possibility of throwing a bomb into your plans with you. Our problem, I think, is that Enoch have got to a point where they are content to. I mean, our aim is probably to qualify for the Champions League. And that's from a financial perspective, that would satisfy the management. They're content for us to basically be challenging for that rather than challenging for the league. And again, it depends on whether that's something that Conte is prepared to bite his tongue and not argue for. I mean, every manager wants more players. Every manager wants the players that he thinks will do a job for him and then won't be around when it turns out that they don't. So I think it's hard to see how that all plays out simply because there are so many moving parts.
Yeah, I think the way the Spurs fan base is feeling about Conte right now is the same way Mike Tomlin refers to his players on the Steelers, which is we want volunteers, not hostages. And it sounds like Antonio Conte constantly wants to be viewed as like a hostage. It's like held captive at Tottenham and its situation. It's like, do you want to be here?
Like whatever way it plays out, he's going to walk away and say, well, they wouldn't back me. You know, I didn't get the support that I needed because that was what I was warning about all along. I could never win trophies with them because I wasn't getting what's the classic managerial line? Their ambition didn't match mine. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, you know, he'd have a much better case if we were playing well, but I think that's your point, is that people are like, okay, I've seen us play better football than this.
It's not like we don't have good players. We have good players. We have a squad full of good players, and they're just not turning it on.
Yeah, all right, Russ, we'll come to you now where performance isn't really the issue. Obviously, going toe-to-toe with Newcastle this week, obviously managing to beat Chelsea towards the back end of last week. I'm sure if people haven't been paying attention or if they lost sight of the Premier League standings during the World Cup, they probably aren't aware that you're already in and about the European places. But today's loss, unfortunately, a disappointing potential dent to that. What did you make of that match? Some of the crazy calls, the double hit penalty. It was just a wild one to watch as a neutral.
Maybe as a neutral, but certainly not as a Fulham supporter. It wasn't really enjoyable. We'll just leave it at that. But it was hard because what's great about my team right now is they can pretty much play with everyone. That includes Man City. I thought Man City was a team they could not play with. They actually have been competitive. The only team that has been able to do a number on them was actually Newcastle United at Craven Cottage, and Fulham had someone sent off early in the match. Chalobah sent off early. So that affected what they obviously wanted to do. And when now they go to St. James's Park, and they're all kind of confident going into that. And I actually had on my show someone that does a podcast on Newcastle United, and he came to me and predicted 3-0 for Newcastle United. Now, I understand the confidence, but my club has really not been a club that has really been dominated all season, like I said, except for when a player got sent off. So what I watched today was my team fight throughout the entire match and gave themselves a chance to not only get something from it, but potentially win it. And then you have the situation with Alexander Mitrovic, and he double kicks his penalty. And I've, like I said, I've never seen that before. And from that point on, from that opportunity on, it was all about Newcastle United. And I thought Marco Silva made an error in judgment. And it's funny because I can't say that often when it comes to him. Because the one great thing about Fulham is that they play on the front foot. They've always pretty much played on the front foot. Well, Marco decided to change it up and get defensive to end the match and brought on another center back. So we went 3 at the back to end the match. And that ended up coming back to bite them because they basically had 2 center backs that really were not on the same page. And then you have someone pretty much gets a tap in to win the match. And that's basically what happened. They fought to the end. I'm very proud of my club because I think that what's great about Fulham is that they are going to compete for 90-plus minutes, and they did again. So I'll leave the match thinking that they gave themselves a chance to win, and they deserve to be 6th. I know that's crazy to sound, but they deserve to be there.
Yeah, and you mentioned being able to kind of look forward to potentially a European spot. I mean, on 31 points already in the preseason, we were asking if Fulham would even stay up, and it seems you've almost already finished that work and are now, right, now free to kind of push up the table. Another thing we talked about before we started the show, just because of the potential that he had to go to either Fulham or Wolves, is Joel Polinha, because as you rightly said, a lot of people get distracted by Mitrovic, especially with the growing influence of fantasy and stuff, but just how important has Polinha been to this Fulham side to help drive you to where you are now?
Vital. Everything is really about him. He is really the heartbeat of Fulham Football Club. I think he probably still leads, well, he has for a while, the Premier League in tackles, and everything feeds off of him. So when he's playing well, it allows Harrison Reed, who really is a defensive midfielder, to become a box-to-box midfielder and be more offensive, and that allows Pereira in that midfield 3 to really float and really get involved up top. So for me, Polinha really just, not only does he protect the back 4, but he does a lot more than that. He also allows them to go forward. So when he plays well, he is just, everything flows for Fulham. And it's funny because the last few matches he has not been at his best, but he still does so much for Fulham Football Club. And the best example I can give you was the one time that they really got battered against Newcastle United. He was suspended for the match. They lost 4-1. That's not an accident. There was a red card, but it was also the fact that Paulinho was out. He is so important to everything that they do. And I know other clubs are interested in him. And I just think that it would be insane for Fulham to even remotely think about selling him right now. They might be forced to this summer, but they got to do whatever they can. Going back to my friend who's the Wolves supporter, you have to keep your key players, and it starts with him. It really does, because Mitro has already proven his loyalty to Fulham. It really comes down to keeping Paulinha, Pereira, and all these players intact going into a season 2 in the Premier League, because they're going to be in the Premier League. But without a doubt, they're not where they are without João Polinha.
Yeah, totally. Even an untrained eye could pick out him on the pitch as being one of the better players in most of the matches he plays. We'll head from there into player watch very conveniently. But this side, talking about players that we think are most likely to potentially leave our clubs by the end of this winter transfer window. Thomas, we'll start with you and Wolves.
Yeah, I think we're, for a team that hardly score any goals, we're bizarrely overloaded in attack now. And I think a player we bought in the summer was Goncalo Guedes or Guedes. And, you know, we paid Valencia a lot of money, 30 million euros, I think, for him. He came with a reasonable pedigree. It just hasn't really clicked for him. He's got a couple of goals, but he hasn't been brilliant. He's been inconsistent. And then Lopetegui was asked about him because he wasn't in the squad yesterday. And, you know, he said it was a tactical reason. So, you know, a guy you spend 25, 30 million quid on, he's not making it into an 18-man squad. So something doesn't add up there. And with the money we've spent out, it makes sense that someone's going to be offloaded. So you can well imagine that Jorge Mendes is having phone calls as we speak, trying to find a solution for him. But yeah, I mean, I probably would have said Raul Jimenez at the start of the month, but Lopetegui has reintegrated him into the squad, and he's you know, got a number of minutes under his belt, and he's starting to look a lot better for that as well. So I've had to pick one, Goncalo Guedes, and then maybe Traore, just because he's got 6 months left on his deal. He seems like he's playing within himself, trying to avoid getting an injury. Maybe some team would think I'll take a punt on him and pay him the big salary that he wants, because he's obviously angling for that big contract. But, you know, he and the club may choose to wait it out until the summer.
It looks like, looks like Lucas Moura is probably on his way, Kev, either in this window or at the end of the season. Obviously, a player whose place in Spurs history is ensured after the Ajax semi-final. But I think a lot of Spurs fans would be okay with him moving on if it creates space for another creative player like Brian Gill to continue develop in the encouraging way that he has recently. And you were asking me before we came on to grasp for positives out of today. And not just from today, but over the past few games, Brian Gill has looked good. As I mentioned earlier, I think, though, probably what will happen in this window is that there's going to be an evaluation of the players who are out on loan currently and see where the squad might land for next season. And also, for example, you know, we brought in Longley on loan because Conte wanted Bastoni. And if we're not going to be in the Champions League next season, I think the chances of Bastoni coming to us are probably small to none. So, yeah, there's a lot of pieces to the jigsaw. But Lucas Moura, if he does end up going, then thank you for everything and much success.
For Fulham, I'm going to give you two. One is going to be Kevin Mbabu. I expect Kevin Mbabu, if they are able to find another right back, to go right back out, to be honest with you, to be sold, because he has not worked out at all. He is probably one of the only misses this summer for Fulham. He really has not even had a chance to play, and that just tells you that he's not trusted by Marco Silva. So I expect Kevin Mbabu to go. The other interesting one is a loan situation, because there's speculation that Fulham might try to bring in a player on loan. And if they do, they might have to have a player go back to Leeds United, which is Dan James. So there is speculation that if Fulham want to bring a player in on loan, that Dan James would go back to Leeds United. And that would be unfortunate. Dan James's career has been all over the place. It just hasn't worked out for him so far at Fulham. He's got the pace, but he's just not the finished article. So it wouldn't shock me if you see Dan James back at Leeds United.
Gotcha. Yeah, interesting potential misses there. Do you think the thing that messed with Dan James was Willian being on trial or just training at the club and then deciding to sign?
I don't think that's it. I've heard what Marco Silva had to say about Dan James, and what it really came down to for him is that it really has just taken him a long time to learn his way of playing football compared to the way it's being played at Leeds United or Manchester United. It's just taken him a while to integrate. And I think he's playing him, but he's just not playing him regularly. We've seen some glimpses of the player that I think Fulham wanted. We saw that against Manchester United. And we've seen it in the cup match, but ultimately there are a lot of wingers right now vying for positions, and they just got Manor Solomon back. So that might make him basically available to go back, because they do have another winger, even though Solomon is more of a left-sided winger. They've already played him on the right-hand side. So that tells me they might be preparing for Dan James to go back to Leeds United.
Gotcha. Well, certainly be interesting to see if you do give up on two players that you signed so recently. But yeah, it's hard to argue with the results that you've had thus far this season. We'll wrap up here with match previews. Thomas, you're going to be facing Liverpool because of a series of dubious VAR and refereeing decisions in the first leg. What do you think you'll see in this one?
Dubious. I think that's very charitable, Kev. Dubious decisions. We were cheated out of that game. I hope I've never come across as overly, rose-coloured glasses in favour of all, but that was one of the greatest injustices I've ever seen on a football pitch. Not just for the goal at the end, but the Salah offside for their goal. He's offside. I don't understand. I still can't get my head around that. But I fancy our chances in this, Kev. And we don't get anything off Liverpool ever. And even when we do, something comes along like those decisions, it seems like, just consistently. But I fancy us, because I think Klopp's going to make changes to that team so soon after the Brighton game. And I don't think their first team's, clicking together very well. So if he gets the blend of that team wrong, as I say, our squad's a bit beefier these days. I think the 11 we put out could be quite decent. So I'm going to go for a cup upset. I'm going to go big. I think we're going to put them out on Tuesday. I'm going to say 2-1 to Wolves.
Following the age-old sports adage, ball don't lie.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly a good time for you to play them with your form in there. So yeah, as you say, injustice is probably a closer, more accurate way to describe that. But best of luck to you in that one. Steve, as for Tottenham, you get a reprieve finally after the North London Derby, having to just face check schedule. Oh, Manchester City. Not exactly an ideal bounce back opportunity, but of course, the only top six side that Tottenham managed to beat last year, and they did it twice.
Right, exactly. Plus the way the fixture switch comes about, we actually have to play City twice in the next few weeks. It could be a make or break pair of games for us. And not to mention, that's a tricky game we have against Fulham coming up. Russ, you must be pretty upbeat about taking us on right now. I wouldn't even predict that we are going to come out unscathed from the cup tie against Preston. I think that might turn out to be a tricky trip to Deepdale. But certainly playing City twice in I think it's the next 3.5 weeks or something like that is not what you would call an ideal bounce back. So let's wait and see. Let's wait and see.
Not optimistic. I think the one thing that's the huge difference is that Sonny has been the City killer historically.
Right.
And
right,
he has been a shadow of himself this year. So yeah.
Oh yeah.
Not that's too optimistic.
Inexplicable.
Yep. Yeah. And then Russ, you get to talk about a Tottenham match too, because at the weekend,
I do,
as Steve mentioned, it's Fulham versus Tottenham. And as you said, you gotta be feeling a little confident.
Well, I am. More to do with Fulham than to do with Tottenham, just because Fulham have really been difficult to beat at Craven Cottage. So I do feel confident, and I'm looking forward to it, because I wanted to see how Fulham would react the second time that they would play Arsenal, second time that they would play Tottenham, especially at home. So I do like Fulham's chances, and I wouldn't bet against them against Spurs next Monday night. I think Fulham have a good chance to get all 3 points, partially because of the way that they play at home. Not that they play badly on the road. They've actually played well, but they have made Craven Cottage a fortress once again. So I do like their chances.
All right, well, we'll leave things there. If you guys want to tell folks where they can find you or anything you're working on, now's a great time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, guys. All things Wolves. I'm not going to repeat all the places you can find us, as I always do. Just Google Wolves blog. You're going to see the blog and Facebook and Twitter. And, you know, we're active in all those places. If your team's playing Wolves or, you know, you just fancy reading about Wolves, look us up. And there's lots of great content and discussion over on the wolvesblog.com.
Thank you very much for having me on again, Kevin. And thanks, guys. That was a really good conversation. And it's always good to remember that whatever happens when your club plays, you get a chance to make it right next week. Kevin, usually when I sign off, I point folks to what I call my non-football writing project. But it might actually be interesting for this audience that the latest Q&A that I've done is with a soccer writer and betting strategist, where we talk about the World Cup just passed and the one next to come in the Americas. So if you think that might be worth reading, you can check that out at statesofplayproject.com and go to the conversation section. And thanks again, guys. Take care.
Okay, well, you can follow me on Twitter for under Russ_Goldman, and also at the Twitter account for Cottage Talk. I am the host of Cottage Talk. My name is Russ Goldman. I would really appreciate the follows. And as I mentioned earlier, guys, what's great about Cottage Talk is that we're now part of the TalkSport Fan Network, which will have a big promotional launch soon. But we've been part of it since September, and it's been nice to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. But you can definitely follow me on Twitter at the places I just mentioned.
Yeah, and Russ, I think I'm coming on there soon to talk about that match. So
I certainly hope so.
Yeah, very easy for this audience to come swing by and check out your stuff over at Cottage Talk. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find this show at EPL Roundtable. You can find me on Twitter at Kevroff. You can find the podcast by searching EPL Roundtable in any of your podcast services. But big thanks to these three for coming on today. And folks at home, we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.